please. Hopefully you've all read the agenda. We have some changes I need to read. I have the following request to amend the agenda. Under delegations, add letter C, Representative Joe.
We'll need to have the roll call.
Roll call. My fault. Roll call first. Roll call, Ms. Ford.
Chairman Highlander.
Here.
Vice Chairman Jones.
Here.
Mr. Galloway.
Here.
Mrs. Lennon.
Here.
Mrs. Robinson.
Here.
Mr. Smith. Mr. Testerman.
Here.
Mrs. Thurman.
Here.
Mr. Wingate.
Here.
Superintendent Dr. Johnson.
Here. Thank you. Sorry, I forgot we didn't do that in the first go around. Okay. The following add under delegations, we need to add Representative Joanne Favors. We also need to add Prior Bacon with the D9 Education Association. Under Section 5, approval of the consent agenda. Item B, school operations. 1, field trips. Dr. Sharp and Leandria Ware. Remove item number 4, Hickson High School. 12 members of the volleyball team traveling to Gatlinburg, Tennessee, September 8th and 9th, 2017, to compete in the Rocky Top Classic. Will have to be resubmitted per Sandy Lohman. And remove item number 6, STEM School, Chattanooga. 1 student enrolled in 10th grade will travel to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, August 1st and 2nd, 2017, to attend the Civic Action Conference, canceled per Lori Bledsoe. Add Memorandum of Agreement between Red Bank High School and the Helen Ross McNabb Center. Add Item F, Board Matters, Dr. Kelly's status through July 31st, 2017. Do we have a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
I second.
Approved by Ms. Jones, second by Mr. Testerman. Do we have anything to be pulled?
It's discussion. Is there any discussion?
So as is, nothing to be pulled and discussed. Oh, did I miss Mr. Wingate?
We need to. Is it time for that?
No.
Oh.
No, it's not. This isn't the consent.
This is just the agenda, approval of the agenda, and we'll do the consent agenda.
Just approval agenda and the consent agenda. Okay.
Move to approve the agenda.
Okay, we already have a motion and a second. This is only to approve the agenda, and then we will do the consent agenda later.
Pardon me?
We need a vote.
We need to call for the vote.
Okay, let's call for the vote.
Okay. Mr. Galloway?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mrs. Lennon?
Yes.
Mrs. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Testerman?
Yes.
Mrs. Thurman?
Yes.
Mr. Wingate?
Yes.
Chairman Highlander?
Yes. We should be ready for the pledge. Mm-hmm. And the, all members are present except for Joe Smith. Callie Stewart, Assistant Principal of Abson Elementary, will present the meditation and the pledge to the flag.
Good evening. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And if you'll give me a little latitude, I have a story that I'd like to read for you for this evening. The Pickle Jar. The pickle jar, as far back as I can remember, sat beside the dresser in my parents' bedroom. When he got ready for bed, Dad would empty his pockets and toss his coins into the jar. As they were dropped into the jar, they landed with a merry jingle when the jar was almost empty. Then the tones gradually muted to a dull thud as the jar filled. I used to squat on the floor in front of the jar and admire the copper and silver circles that glinted like a pirate's treasure when the sun poured through the bedroom window. When the jar was filled, Dad would sit at the kitchen table and roll the coins before taking them to the bank. Taking the coins to the bank was always a big production. Stacked neatly in a small cardboard box, the coins were placed between Dad and me on the seat of his old truck. Each and every time as we drove to the bank, Dad would look at me hopefully. "Those coins are going to keep you out of the textile mill, son. You're going to do better than me. This old mill town's not going to hold you back." Also, each and every time as he slid the box of rolled coins across the counter at the bank toward the cashier, he would grin proudly and say, "These are for my son's college fund. He'll never work at the mill all of his life as I did." We would always celebrate each deposit by stopping for ice cream. I always got chocolate. Dad got vanilla. When the clerk at the ice cream parlor handed Dad his change, he would show me the few change coins nestled in his palm. "When we get home, we'll start filling the jar again." He always let me drop the first coins into the empty jar. As they rattled around with a brief happy jingle, we grinned at each other. "You'll get to college on pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters," he said. "But you'll get there. I'll see to that." The years passed, and I finished college and took a job in another town. Once, while visiting my parents, I used the phone in their bedroom and noticed that the pickle jar was gone. It had served its purpose and had been removed. A lump rose in my throat as I stared at the spot between the dresser where the jar had always stood. My dad was a man of few words and never lectured me on the values of determination, perseverance, and faith. The pickle jar had taught me all these virtues more eloquently than the most flowery of words could have done. When I married, I told my wife Susan about the significant part of the lowly pickle jar that it played in my life as a boy. In my mind, it defined more than anything else how much my dad had loved me. No matter how rough things got at home, Dad continued to doggedly drop his coins into the jar. Even the summer when Dad got laid off from the mill and Mama had to serve dried beans several times a week, not a single dime was taken from the jar. To the contrary, as Dad looked across the table at me pouring catsup over my beans to make them more palatable, he became more determined than ever to make a way out for me. "When you finish college, son," he told me, his eyes glistening, "you'll never have to eat beans again, unless you want to." The first Christmas after our daughter Jessica was born, we spent the holiday with my parents. After dinner, Mom and Dad sat next to each other on the sofa, taking turns cuddling their first grandchild. Jessica began to whimper softly, and Susan took her from Dad's arms. "She probably needs to be changed," she said, carrying the baby into my parents' room to change her diaper. When Susan came back into the living room, there was a strange mist in her eyes. She handed Jessica back to Dad before taking my hand and leading me into the bedroom. "Look," she said softly, her eyes directing me to the spot on the floor beside the dresser. To my amazement, there, as if it had never been removed, stood the old pickle jar, the bottom already covered with coins. I walked over to the pickle jar, dug down into my pocket, and pulled out a fist full of coins. With a gamut of emotions choking me, I dropped the coins into the jar. Then I looked up and saw my dad carrying Jessica. He had slipped quietly into the room. Our eyes locked, and I knew he was feeling the same emotions I felt. Neither one of us could speak, but we knew nothing had to be said. Just a few questions for you to ponder. What do you do each day to invest in the lives of our children? What type of investment is it? Are you receiving a return on your investment? And is that investment what you intended? Please join me in prayer. Father, we thank you for the opportunity to begin this upcoming school year, and we ask you that you bless the students, faculties, the students' families, the new superintendent, Dr. Johnson, central office employees, and school board members that make our schools great places. We pray that you will guide us in your ways so that we will seek your will in everything that we do and love others as you love us. We ask this in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Both the story you read and the prayer were a blessing. Thank you very much. Before we start into the rest of the program, we do have of at least two elected representatives. We have the Honorable Joanne Favors, and if you'd raise your hand, ma'am, she's going to address the group in a minute. Give her a hand, please. And, Senator Todd Gardenhire, I believe, was here a minute ago. Give him a hand, please. Do we have any other elected officials? Well, thank you very much. Now, if you would, please, next will be recognitions and presentations, Dr. McDade, concerning class.
Thank you, Mr. Highlander. I'd like to introduce to the board members Robert Gowan from class and Elizabeth Millsaps. I will turn it over to them at this time.
Thank you, Dr. McDade. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and Dr. Johnson. And Dr. Johnson, we haven't had a chance to meet yet, but our mutual friend Joe Pitt speaks very, very highly of you, and welcome. I'm Robert Gowan, and this is my partner, Elizabeth Millsaps. We represent the organization known as CLASS, which includes the Big Four school systems in Tennessee. And our contract requires that we come and give a report on the legislative session that's just ended each year. And that's what we're here to do tonight. We provided the board with three documents. We're going to go over just one of them. But we did give Ms. Ford a list of 47 of the K-12 bills that were introduced and passed this year. And then another list of about 150 K-12 bills that were introduced and did not pass. But most of those are still pending for 2018. We're going to go over just some highlights through this PowerPoint. Hopefully this will be brief and we'll leave plenty of time for questions. First thing we wanted to talk about we think is good news. For the third year in a row, Governor Haslam and the General Assembly have included at least $200 million, and this year is almost a quarter of $1 million in new money for K-12 education. You can see the list of items, and that's not an exhaustive list of all quarter of $1 million, but there is $100 million included for teacher salaries. $77 million is generally what's known as BEP inflation. That allows for enrollment, pays for enrollment growth, and other inflationary factors included in the BEP. As you can see, with the additional money for salaries, this BEP salary component in 2017-18 will go from about $42,000 to $46,000. And as long as I've been following K-12 education, that's the largest increase in that salary component. So we think the General Assembly and Governor Haslam should be commended for still working on the target that Governor Haslam's been focusing on and making Tennessee the fastest growing state in the country for teacher salaries. You're part of that this year. Hamilton County, as of last week, you'll get about $5 million in additional money. In your total, $154 million. You have gone since 2015. 2015, you got about $139 million. So you have had a fairly significant increase of almost $25 million in the last 3 years. And I'm going to finish up with some more budget items and then let Elizabeth talk about vouchers. There was legislation that was filed but didn't pass that related to the budget and the BEP. There was legislation filed that would have required the average teacher salary to be used as that salary component. That was filed but did not pass. It was also legislation filed by the chairman of the Finance Committee that would have required the state to pay a minimum percentage to all school districts. And that bill would have benefited the big four systems besides Shelby County. It would have benefited Hamilton County. But that did not pass. We expect there to be more discussion of that next year. There was a lot of discussion, and we think will be a lot of discussion next year, including money in the BEP for RTI. That's a federal requirement that local districts are paying for 100%. Also, legislation filed trying to increase the amount of money that is in the BEP for counselors and nurses. And then the last bill, I'm going to talk about just briefly, it was a bill filed that we were concerned about. It would have required school districts to provide new school teachers $500 in money, which is $200 more. Is that right? Than every teacher gets for classroom supplies. It's very commendable, something that we're not opposed to in principle, but it was a bill that was filed that was not, there was not going to be additional BEP, any additional state money. Local districts were going to have to shift money, and that did die in the Senate Finance Committee because of that concern that there was going to be a mandate on districts and there was no additional state money to pay for that.
Yes, and the probably most contentious issue that we negotiated this year on behalf of class certainly was vouchers. Senate Bill 161 would have created a pilot program starting vouchers in Shelby County. I think we all understand that that's certainly the camel's nose under the tent, and we want to be careful with how proliferation would happen after that program has started. The bill was approved in both House and Senate Education Committees, but was deferred in finance around some funding concerns that a number of both urban and rural legislators expressed this year. The pro-voucher movement spends a tremendous amount of money in the legislature, probably more than any other education issue, to engage and support this issue. We understand those concerns and continue to battle. There were about 50 registered lobbyists working against the about seven of us who work for public schools that we worked through this year. The biggest controversial issue is some accountability measures. There are a number of private schools who don't want to use a vehicle like 10 Ready, and we feel very strongly, as do the finance leadership in both the House and the Senate, that if accountability is the most important tool for measuring growth and progress in public schools, then we need to be able to measure the performance of those students as they transition from a traditional school to a non-traditional school. And we will continue to work with the legislature this year to make sure that there's a solution to that problem if vouchers should move forward in any way. There was a second bill that was filed but did not pass, to create a statewide voucher program or an empowerment scholarship. Those are very similar to Arizona's kind of private school savings account that parents have access to. And it would increase the number of students that qualify for the IEA, which is the special needs voucher program. We understand these are parents who have very difficult decisions to make and are struggling to find the best possible resources. But we certainly advocate that if the best resources are moving that child into a private facility or with some private partnerships, that there are certainly stopgaps in place to protect the investment of tax dollars and protect the parents and the child to make sure that they're not being taken advantage of while they're already in this very stressful and contentious position.
I know you spent some time at 4:30 talking about the Achievement School District. Wanted to let you know there was legislation filed this year that would have prohibited the Achievement School District from adding grades to schools that they have taken over. For instance, taken over middle school, and then once those eighth graders are about to go into the ninth grade out of 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, the ASD, charter schools in ASD have attempted to do that, and Shelby County. That bill did not pass, but we'll talk in a little bit about an administration bill that did pass that does the same thing. Also, there was a bill filed that would have required parents to vote before schools could be turned over to the ASD.
The next issue that we're going to talk about are charter schools, and this bill, Senate Bill 1197, was actually an administration bill sponsored by Governor Haslam on behalf of the Department of Education that we feel did some really healthy and smart things to sort of streamline and clarify some charter school oversight. The most important component for you all probably at this point is to allow your districts to withhold an authorizer fee that we have negotiated and argued for several years with the legislature that there's a real cost to those services, especially in districts that have more charter schools. There are staff and overhead costs that have to be managed, and this creates a vehicle by which you can start to collect that in your charter process. The maximum allowed for the four charter schools here would be $140,000. That's based on 3% of student population, which is less than what the state board or the Achievement School District is allowed to charge for their districts. This sort of recognizes that you already have an established administrative vehicle, so your costs can be shared throughout some of your school expenses that you're seeing with your traditional schools as well. So this is kind of a healthy compromise, we feel, for that. It requires the immediate revocation of a charter for a school that is identified as a priority school, so that clarifies and strengthens your ability. If you have a school that's not performing, to go ahead and step in and intervene in a way that helps those kids as quickly and efficiently as possible. It requires the LEA to share some information with charter schools so that they are able to look at students that are eligible. This is something that most of you are already doing with your current charter schools, so it's a good information sharing opportunity that was a compromise between the needs of the charter schools themselves and their ability to communicate with families. So if you have parents who are willing to be in a school directory, you can share that information clearly with those charter schools as well. And it includes some reporting requirements for you to report to the Department of Education around approval or denial, so that you have to do that in a timely manner. That's something that you guys are doing already as well. And it creates a grant program for some facilities that over time we anticipate will receive some state funding, that those new charter schools may be able to look at that as a tool for facilities. We understand that you all struggle with your facilities, as do charter schools, and hopefully this provides a little bit of relief on both sides of that discussion. Senator Tracy carried a bill this year on behalf of the Tennessee School Board Association that we also supported that requires a new chartering authority to pay an application fee of $2,500. The previous application fee was $500. TSBA felt that this was important, particularly in some rural districts, to give them a little pot of money to start their authorization process as charters expand. We feel that it's important for you all that if you have a school that wants to operate in Chattanooga that doesn't have $2,500 to apply with an application, then they need to do some more work before they come before you all. That it's expensive to operate a school, and you want to make sure that they have focused on the needs of that community and have some investment and some commitment from the folks who are involved, so that you know that their application is serious and they're not wasting the already stretched time of your staff to review an application that doesn't stand a chance.
Senate Bill 1198 is also an administration bill, and it's the bill that the Haslam administration filed to essentially make some changes to the law to match up with the ESSA plan that's been filed with the Federal Department of Education. It was a fairly lengthy bill, but those four bullet points at the bottom are probably the most important to you. A priority school is now defined as not just a school that is performing in the bottom 5%. It also includes high schools that fail to graduate one-third or more of their students, and schools with chronically low-performing subgroups. So that is an expansion of priority schools. It's our understanding that this year that would not have put an additional high school. There may have been two high schools in Memphis that would have been added, but there will not be a significant number of high schools that are added because of that change. And this is probably the most significant to you all, your current discussion. It revises the current intervention requirement to first provide that the first turnaround attempt be an LEA-led intervention. That is a change where right now the first first option is the ASD, but the commissioner and the Department of Education have submitted a plan that says the first turnaround attempt would be by the LEA. And this is a bill I mentioned earlier that prohibits ASD from adding grades to schools taken over. And there had been a lot of questions about how long the ASD could operate a school after they take it over. This bill limits the ASD takeover to 10 years. It's also tied to two priority school lists. If you don't come off the priority school list after two priority school lists have been run, the school is given back to the district. But there is essentially a 10-year limit. And around assessments, this is a second year, there was an attempt to allow school districts to use ACT rather than 10 Ready as the assessment. That got a little more discussion and attention this year than it did last year. We expect that might be back again next year. That's something that the department opposes. There were also bills filed that would have limited the number of state assessments and the amount of time that teachers and students would spend preparing and taking state tests.
Another topic of great deal of discussion this year was school bus safety, as you all are certainly painfully aware. Senate Bill 1210 was another Haslam administration bill. Governor Haslam worked with the Department of Safety and the Department of Education to bring forth some new standards. One of the things it does is establish a transportation supervisor position to make sure there's a specific vehicle by which parents can offer complaints about a driver or reach out with any concerns that they may have, and there's a specific point of contact of accountability for your transportation programs. It requires some additional training for new school bus drivers. The Department of Safety will partner in their commercial driver's license program with the Department of Education to develop those standards and keep them in an evolving process to really serve the needs of communities and specific student populations. It requires a driver to be at least 25 before they're eligible for a school bus license, and they must have at least 5 years of unrestricted driving experience before they're eligible to apply. There was legislation that was filed that was heavily discussed to require seatbelts on school buses. I think that's something that the legislature has committed to continue to explore. There are some logistical management problems about how to implement that cost that they're going to have to look at and do some heavy lifting, but they certainly understand it's a priority in a number of communities and are continuing to discuss that issue. There were also legislation to require cameras on buses. I think that's something some districts are choosing, but the legislature was not willing to require that just at this time. And there was also a legislation to allow a police officer to inspect the portable electronic device, the cell phone, that sort of thing, of a bus driver at the scene of an accident so they could see if any text messages or internet usage had happened. That's something that I think that the law enforcement community is really delving into, a balance of need for privacy versus public safety, and are exploring some options, and we anticipate that coming back in the next legislative session for some additional discussion.
Last year, the Haslam administration passed a pre-K bill that essentially made the pre-K program across the state, rather than money that automatically comes to each district, it's a grant program now. And each district has to show every year that they are complying with the requirements of pre-K. This year, Chairman Bill Dunn from Knoxville introduced a bill that would have created another pilot program within that pilot program that would have allowed school districts to use those pre-K dollars on programs other than the pre-K program that is required by statute. That would be, for instance, maybe a six-week pre-K class, or actually using those dollars outside of pre-K and in first, second, or third grade to shore up a reading program. That bill was introduced, heavily discussed in the House, but it did fail in the House Education Subcommittee.
There's a perennial new favorite of transsexual restroom issues that came up in the legislature this year. Because of the change in the federal government climate with our new president, the issues that the legislature felt the need to address in the past are maybe not quite so pressing anymore. So we were able to see that sort of take a step back. And we anticipate that we will continue to advocate on your behalf as this issue arises. We understand that in most of these circumstances, your principal is in the building. They know the student and the particular circumstance, and they're probably better equipped to make that decision than anyone else. And as we do on almost all issues that we work for you, we recognize that your local control is very important, and we'll continue to advocate that you have the ability to make the decisions in your communities that you need to.
And the last bill we'll mention was introduced but not passed. We expect it to be back next year. The TOSS organization introduced this bill that would have created an administrative review process whenever the commissioner, currently the commissioner, can withhold BEP funds for what, and she has wide discretion in doing that, if the commissioner determines that a school district has done something that warrants withholding funds. If she does that, you currently have no recourse other than going to Chancery Court in Davidson County. This would create an administrative review process where an ALJ, an administrative law judge, would review the commissioner's decision, and that decision could be appealed to Chancery Court. But again, that was introduced, not passed. It will be back in 2018. And with that, we'll be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions for our representatives here? Ms. Robinson?
The BEP.
I didn't see anything, and I apologize if I missed it, but I didn't hear anything that kind of goes into more of what the $22.2 million to serve ELL students would cover. I mean, do you know any specifics around that you can share with us?
Last year, the ratio was changed, and I don't have the ratio on top of my head, but the ratio was changed to require more teachers, more ELL teachers per student. That was put into the statute, but there was no additional money put into the budget to pay for that. And this is actually the issue that the Metro Nashville School Board brought litigation, because the state was requiring a lower ratio, but they were not providing additional money. But this is providing that additional money to pay for that lower ratio.
Any other questions for them, please? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Very much appreciate it.
Yes, thank you very much. As public school parents, we appreciate the opportunity to do such important work on your behalf.
Next, we have our good friend, Ms. Karen Glenn, speaking of year-end bullying compliance report.
I didn't want you to start dancing too quickly. Dr. Highlander, school board members, and welcome to you too, Dr. Johnson. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share with you our year-end compliance report. I do believe you have this report before you, and I won't go through and read this verbatim, but I do want to highlight a few things I think will be of interest to you. Just as a reminder, this is information that we have collected from every school, and this is in our year-end report that will be submitted to the Tennessee Department of Education. First of all, we are glad to say that our incidences have been reduced by about a third. And even though we're glad that we're moving in the right direction, we know that there is still work to be done. So we want to continue to bring those numbers down. Much of what we've done, we feel like we attribute that to the extensive training that has been done. You can see the training numbers at the bottom, with their professional development being 979, with student training that's been at 1,072. Now, I do want to emphasize that the training that is done is not just a one-stop shop. You know, the training is more like a train-the-trainer. When the students go through training, they are given very specific information about carrying out an action plan in their school campuses. So the numbers, even though these numbers are high, we feel like the impact is even greater than that. But we do have some goals. One of the things that we do want to make sure is that our parent and community forum, we'd like to improve that. Last year, we did have a great forum that was held at Hickson Middle School. It was probably one of the best attended that I have facilitated. And so we want to kind of capture that and make sure that we're doing better with engaging our parents so that they understand what efforts we have underway and what they can do to help to support those issues. Now, I will pause for a moment before we show the PowerPoint presentation. The purpose of the presentation is to give you a snapshot of the training that has taken place throughout the district. But before I share that, I'll just ask if there are any questions about this report. If there is not, then I'll say at this time we'll share the PowerPoint presentation.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. All through my city, all through my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. Come on, like the way we rock it. So don't stop. And under the lights when everything goes. Nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close. When you dance, 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 feel a good, good creeping up on you. So just dance, 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 come on. All those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance, dance, dance. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance, 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 come on.
Ooh, it's something magical. It's in the air, it's in my blood, it's rushing on. I don't need no reason, don't be control. I fly so high, no ceiling when I'm in my zone. Cause I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. You're more like the way we rock it. So don't stop, stop, stop. Under the lights when everything goes. Nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close. When we move, well, you already know. So just imagine. You when you dance, dance, dance. Feel the good, good creeping up on you. So just dance, dance, dance. Come on. All those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance, dance, dance. I can't stop the feeling. So just dance, dance, dance. Come on. So just dance, dance, dance.
I can't stop the feeling.
Keep it.
The only thing better would have been if you had danced, Miss Glenn. But thank you very much. You must have had Miss Ketcher take some of those pictures. They were so good.
We'll utilize her very often.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's very good. Thank you so much. We appreciate your efforts on behalf of the children. Thank you.
I have a question, Dr. Highlander, if that's
yes,
okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Miss Glenn, I was just curious. I mean, in fact, Kathy was just raving about the program. It looks super fun. It might have just been the music. But it really does look so much fun. I was just curious. This year we had 1,072 students who took the training. Is there anything that, like, we can do as a board to help you scale that? Or is there anything, like, are you thinking through how to scale that to, you know, get to even more students on an annual basis?
Yes. Basically, what we're doing is we're fine-tuning our action plan. So every time a group of students go through, they are challenged with coming up with an action plan, which is where you saw the students that were writing out what that plan is, and to follow up with them to make sure that they are carrying that out. We have found that students have tremendous power in positively influence school climate. And so we want to just kind of harness that and get them so that they are supported. They've got great ideas, and if we just listen to what they do and listen to some of the issues that they're facing, then we feel like that we can have even greater outcomes next year. Is that it?
Thank you. Yep. Any other questions? We appreciate you very much, your efforts. Now we have delegations. Ms. Jones, would you read your normal reading? If each of the four people speaking would address. And also, Ms. Ford, do we have any additional speakers to these four? Could you just have four speakers? If you four would listen. Ms. Jones, please.
Thank you for your interest in addressing the Hamilton County Board of Education. During your presentation, please address the board as a whole, not individual board members or administrators. Also, do not present complaints or concerns you have about an individual employee of the school system. If you wish to voice those complaints and concerns, you should contact the central office and ask for a meeting with the superintendent. If you are criticizing an individual employee, I will interrupt you and ask you to refrain. If you continue to criticize individual employees, or if your remarks are in error or becoming repetitive, I may interrupt you and ask you to sit down. Please limit your remarks to 5 minutes. I will tell you when you have 1 minute left. You may begin when you're ready. And we have for delegation today, Dan Liner, Ezra Harris, Representative Joanne Favors, and Prior Bacon.
So, Chairman Highlander, school board members, and welcome Dr. Johnson to our meeting tonight. I appreciate the lottery discussion from 4:30 to 5:30 about the challenge that this school board is facing and that indeed this community is facing as well. There are numbers of school districts within the past 10 years who have experienced the same challenge that this school board is now facing. And those school boards did turn to a partnership. Please note I'm not saying partnership district, but those districts did turn to a partnership. The partnership included universities. The partnership included businesses. The partnership included social service agencies. The partnership included civic groups. The partnership also included churches, the United Way, and many other partnerships were formed as a result of this choice to choose partnership. Schools, especially in Cincinnati, Ohio, have actually turned 55 schools into partnership schools. Schools in Austin, Texas have done the same. Nearby in Knoxville, we have a school called Pond Gap Elementary School that also turned to partnership, not the partnership district, but to partnership. Nashville has a school also that turned to partnership as well. Schools in Minneapolis were failing miserably only about 5 years ago, and that school system also turned to a partnership that is working beautifully in Minneapolis. This partnership is actually called the Community Schools Model. I've spoken to you before about community schools, but what we know from data, if you explore the plethora of data that are available concerning community schools, we know that community schools work. Community schools, first of all, involve the community. The initial partnership is with the community. And if the community were to adopt one or all five or all 21 of the schools that have been referenced, based on the data that are out there, we would find that there would be tremendous improvement in these schools, not only academically, but also in terms of literacy, in terms of math skills, in terms also of, remarkably, student attendance. Because we find in all of these community schools that there's a dramatic increase in student attendance. And I certainly would commend this board for your approval of Hamilton County's one community school, and of course that is Red Bank High School. Red Bank High School began as a community school model should begin by hiring a community school coordinator. That is the first step. I would advocate that this board consider a position at central office or a position within the school system that would allow a community school coordinator to begin overseeing the implementation of community schools. Many people do not know exactly what a community school is, so I actually have a definition I want to share with you, and I want to read the definition verbatim. A community school is at the center of the community, open all day. Many community schools are open until 11 o'clock at night, sometimes till midnight, on weekends as well. Open to everyone in the community, every parent, every non-parent, and even the homeless as well. But mostly it is open for students, and it produces great results. The definition goes on to say that brings together academics, health and social services, youth and community development and community engagement under one roof, leading to these three results, which are very, very important as we are considering as a district how we will respond. Community schools result in improved learning, stronger families, addressing those socioeconomic issues that someone said tonight that we cannot address. The community school is a way to address those socioeconomic issues that trouble that are troubling to many of our schools, but also healthier communities, because community schools bring in health professionals, doctors and dentists, optometrists. I understand my time is out. You understand that I'm endorsing community schools. I'm asking you also to endorse community schools.
Dan, you get me every time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
We appreciate this opportunity to come to you before you, Dr. Highlander, and we welcome you, Dr. Johnson, as our new superintendent. As you know, back in November, the Woodmore community, we suffered a tragedy. And, of course, Mrs. Jones and, of course, Dr. Highlander, you came out, and along with Dr. Kirk Kelly. The Woodmore community wants to show its appreciation to you, Mrs. Jones, for your efforts of coming out. You came out. You do care. You've shown strong support. And we want to show the appreciation, this certificate of appreciation presented to you today along with a T-shirt. We appreciate you so much because we love you, and we want to let you know that Woodmore loves you. and we know you love our school. And we won't take up no more of your time, and whatever we can do to help you, we just want you to just call on us, and we'll help you, okay? Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. That thank Woodmore, actually. Y'all do know y'all have a very special place in my heart.
We've got another obligation.
Thank you.
Mr. Harris, I would like to say, too, thank you very much. But I'd also like to thank Mr. Eaves. He has placed some bus drivers, some independent contract bus drivers for the four Woodmore bus districts. And one of them is a good friend of mine who volunteered for the route that had the horrible tragedy last year, and he's doing his best to visit each home and let himself be known to each parent. And I just commend that wonderful service, and we hope and pray that nothing like this ever happens again. God bless you. Thank you. The Honorable Joanne Favors will be next.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity to Board Chairman Dr. Steve Highlander, Dr. Brian Johnson, welcome to Hamilton County, other school board members, my longtime associate, Mrs. Rhonda Thurman, I'm always happy to see her, and all of you, because I know what you do and I know how much money we pay you. Let me just express my sincere thanks to each of you for allowing me this opportunity today. We are all here because of our desire to provide optimal education to our children. And since addressing this body at the May meeting, I have been intensely involved with the newly formed Chattanooga-Hamilton County Public School Coalition. I have engaged in numerous interactions with parents, educators, other elected officials, public school advocacy groups, and national experts who support public education. We have been studying the proposal by Commissioner Candace McQueen to place the five priority schools in a separate district with a separate school board, a separate director, and a minimum contract of 5 years with a private management entity. And much information has been obtained which validates our decision to request from you a minimum moratorium of 1 year. And I understand I wasn't able to make your 4:30 meeting, and I commend you for what you did at 4:30. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I certainly concur with your decision. So just eliminate that 1 year moratorium that we have requested. You have also selected a new superintendent who should not have to come into a divisive climate that this proposal created. This proposed partnership has been referred to as the third way, primarily because of the declining support for expanding charter schools. I have read that the partnership is the charter school without the charter. This past November, voters in Massachusetts opposed expanding charter schools. Even in Memphis, the Shelby County Board of Education recently denied all 14 of the applications for expansions or openings of charter schools. So it is apparent that resistance to charter schools is gaining ground. We all know that companies that operate charter schools, most of them are on the stock exchange, and it has also been reported that venture capitalists have invested in charter schools and contributed millions of dollars to campaigns of school board members and legislators throughout this nation who will support charter schools. We ask that the school board members consider the following issues prior to casting your vote for the proposal for a partnership school zone. I have already requested an attorney general opinion to determine the legality of the school board voting on a memorandum of understanding when the issue being brought for a vote is not even in the state statute. Also, we ask that you understand that the priority schools received over $10 million in additional funding since 2010. We keep hearing that. However, it's being left out that this funding was allocated from $500 million in federal Race to the Top funds that Tennessee received for low-performing schools. So I'd like to know how much additional Race to the Top funding was allocated to other schools in Hamilton County. And this funding should not be used for leverage to support the partnership, because there are too many other variables that have influenced the performance of these schools. The school board can consider proposing a plan, since current state law allows the Commission of Education to approve the plans proposed by this local body. I am providing you this evening with a copy of the statute. The school board can consider having policies and rules developed by the Tennessee Department of Education prior to contracting with a private agency for management of the priority schools. Also, the ASD option was not a good option because it is pretty much dysfunctional right now. So we certainly do not want that. But you do have the authority, and we have some wonderful, wonderful people who are very well, have the expertise to do what we need to do in this county. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, ma'am. We appreciate you. Representing the District 9 Education Association, my good friend and a proponent of education, Mr. Pryor Bacon.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Welcome to our county, and good luck to you, Mr. Chairman, Board. I'm here to tell you about an organization that was formed about 3 years ago and what it has accomplished. I've been on this board for only a year, and I cannot personally take any credit for what I'm about to tell you. And like I've done many times when I was in school, I'm using somebody else's notes. In 3 years, we've raised about $66,000 and given it to Harrison Elementary. Alongside of Unified Ed, we've gotten $41,000 to provide iPads and the charging station for that school. $5,000 to the Wallace A. Smith Playground. I think the total cost of that was about $70,000. A lady, I was a little bit involved in that and helping that get done. $5,000 to Ottawa Elementary, Snow Hill Elementary, Wolf Tiber Creek. And we started out working for the benefit of the elementary schools, and now after 3 years, now we're heading towards, we've also added the middle and high schools. We've done a lot of good things, but the most important thing we've done is what Franklin McCauley was referring to about 15 minutes ago in a conversation. We're elevating the community involvement in our school system, and this 30 seconds is mine, is my belief that 50 years ago, that's how we got all these things done, community involvement. Somehow it's gotten to where it's all on you guys' back. Well, it's not on your back. It's got to have the community involvement behind it. I think that's the cultural shift that we've got to make. And people my age and living longer, and that's what I think we're here for. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And the D9 Education Foundation would like to encourage all districts to have something similar in there. Next, we need to move for the approval of the minutes from the June 25th quarterly session.
To approve.
Mr. Galloway,
move to approve. He moved to approve.
He moved.
And I second.
And Ms. Jones, second. Vote not necessary, is it?
We need to vote.
Is it? Okay, vote please.
Mr. Galloway?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mrs. Lennon?
Yes.
Mrs. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Testerman?
Yes.
Mrs. Thurman?
Yes.
Mr. Wingate?
Yes.
Chairman Highlander?
Yes. Now we have, next we have the approval for the consent agenda. Did I miss something, Dr. McDay?
That was the 15th, not the 26th.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's a typo. Thank you, sir.
Move to approve consent agenda.
Okay. We have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any items to pull? Okay. Mr. Parliamentarian, I believe we need to handle these individually. Is that correct?
Well, nothing
pulled. Nothing pulled? Then that's fine. Okay. Okay. Call for the vote then, please.
Mr. Galloway?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mrs. Lennon?
Yes.
Mrs. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Testerman?
Yes.
Mrs. Thurman?
Yes, but since I didn't, this was an addition on, I think we really need to explain to the public, since we've been getting a little bit of blowback about Dr. Kelly's situation. I just think that we need to explain that to the, not that I have a disagreement with it, but I just think we need to explain to the public after we vote. Maybe sure. You can do that.
Can we regress and go back? I think that would be positive to discuss as well. I was waiting on someone to pull that, and no one did.
Well,
so.
I just happened to notice. I was thinking it was under administrative matters, and I looked and I thought, no, it's under the agenda.
May I give my explanation, and you clarify if I'm incorrect?
Sure. Let me suggest for the minutes, let's go ahead and finish the vote.
Okay. Okay, good. Let's go ahead.
Mr. Wingate?
Yes.
Chairman Highlander?
Yes. If I can comment, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Bennett, we agreed when Dr. Kelly took the job as interim that it would be on a month-to-month basis. And when we elected Dr. Johnson, then we still had, by state law, required to have someone in place to sign papers and to be in charge. And Dr. Kelly graciously agreed to stay. And since it was a month-to-month contract, we have to continue that contract through the end of the month of July. And so, is there anything else that needs to be clarified on that?
That explanation is perfect, Dr. Highlander.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Ms. Thurman, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I just wanted to, I've been getting some questions about it, and I just thought that the public needed to understand exactly what was going on.
I think there was some misunderstanding. Some people thought any further work and employment will be between Dr. Kelly and Dr. Johnson.
Right. As Ms. Jones pointed out at the meeting when we were ratifying the contract with Dr. Johnson, Dr. Kelly is month to month. It's just that his status changed. He went from being the superintendent to being effectively another employee with different duties. And he's on the payroll through the end of the month, and at that point, he is retired. If he has any further relationship with the system, that'll be at the discretion of the superintendent.
Thank you. Administrative Business Matters, Board Policy 3202, Emergency Preparedness Plan, first reading. You need to address that, Dr. McDade.
We have two, Dr. Highlander. This is the first reading. No action is required, but we're changing this policy to align with the changes in state law.
Okay. So understood. Now, the revised bus driver contracts, ratification. Now, Mr. Bennett, we need to approve that and second and then vote, or?
You need a motion to approve a second and then discussion if necessary.
Okay.
But the board doesn't have to ratify.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
By Mr. Testerman?
I'll second.
And second by Ms. Thurman. Okay. Any discussion? Do we know approximately, Dr. McDade, how much increase this will be in cost?
A little over $50,000.
Look, that per year?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Ms. Jones?
Oh, one
minute. Oh, I'm sorry.
Somebody, Mike, was on down there first.
Oh. Yes, I had a couple of questions. A couple of concerns, because I felt like we had already agreed on the contract for the bus drivers. And with this new contract, it's my understanding that they're going to get an additional raise plus over what they had with the $9,400. Is that correct, Mr. McDade?
Yes, ma'am. This would give them a more in line with what the employee bus drivers are getting. They're getting a a 4% increase on seat capacity and a 4% raise on operating or maintenance of the bus. We did not have that in the original contract for independent contractors due to the fact that they were getting a $9,500 raise. But this does keep the pay the same and then keeps the steps the same as far as pay goes for all the bus drivers.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Ms. Jones? Ms. Thurman, did you have a question?
Initially it was on and I didn't know.
I too am
like Kathy, and I've struggled with this the whole time this has went on. But I really struggle with the amount. I struggle with the raise because we have employees that, I mean, I know the bus drivers are just as important. I know that. Lord knows I know how important that is. We all know that. But I really struggle because we have people in classrooms, in buildings. They don't have this opportunity. And so I struggle with approving that because, like you said, that's an additional $50,000 that I feel like we could consider somewhere. I just really struggle with that. We have paraprofessionals. We have people who don't work through the summer because we can't afford that. But then we're able to do this. I just really struggle with that. And so I'm going to go ahead and say now I can't in good conscience agree. I mean, I can't vote for that.
Ms. Thurman?
Well, I think I call it a pay raise. We said we were giving them the 95, it was 9,500 in lieu of insurance. And all we did was equalize the pay between the drivers. That's all we did was equalize the pay. And as we knew that a lot of people were not going to sign the contracts the way it was written. So if we wanted more contact drivers, this is going to be what it's going to have to be. And because a lot of people weren't going to sign the contract like it was. So that's one reason I'm all for it, because I understand. Like I said, the $9,500 was supposed to be in lieu of insurance and just equalize the pay between the two, because the insurance is actually worth more than $9,500. But anyway, that's the reason. It's not like that they got a raise. That was in lieu of, well, technically I guess it was a raise, but they would not, I mean, they just didn't think it was fair. Even the owner-operators and the independent contractors, they just did not think it was fair that they were doing the same job and the pays were not equal.
Ms. Lennon?
I just have a question. With the independent bus drivers, the owner-operators have been doing this a lot longer. Correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So, I mean, I think it's like anything, the independent bus drivers automatically should not, they're already getting the $9,400, $9,500 increase, and now to give them an additional increase when our teachers don't even get that much of an increase every year, I think that's not, I just don't think it's in line with the district and the way that we increase pay for our employees. And I think that they haven't worked as long as the owner operators. If a first year teacher is not going to make as much as a fifth year teacher, and a fifth year teacher is not going to make as much as a 10 year teacher, and I feel like the independent drivers haven't been working as long as the owner operators. So I don't think that they should automatically be given the same rate as an owner operator. And that's just my opinion.
Steve, I have another comment, please. First of all, some of the independent contractors, the owner-operator independent contractors, some of them have been driving longer than some of the others because some of them have come back in to work. So some of them have actually been driving longer, have a lot more experience. And also, this board has been very generous in giving the teachers a raise for the past few years. So I'm not going to sit by and take that criticism, because that is not fair criticism of this board.
Mr. Wingate.
Yeah, I want to make a comment on this too. I mean, I'm an educator, and so I'm always about educators getting what I believe to be increases and opportunities. But I will say, and I've been one to say all along, that I value the service that independent contractors bring. I think we all do. We've talked about the quality of service that they would bring. And again, you know, this was about equalizing pay, And so that's what we did. And I understand where educators would come from. My only comment would be, we are trying to take care of our bus drivers, but I will say it must not be too lucrative of a deal, because we weren't even able to fill the 20 routes that we opened up. So, you know, we had all this discussion in the winter about how many routes were we going to try to take away from our contract service, and we were trying to entice more independent owner-operators to become a part of our system again. And I believe it, at one time our discussions ranged all the way up to trying to open up 100 routes, and we couldn't fill 20. So I think what we're doing is trying to provide a fair employment opportunity. I think we've done that. I think now that we've done that, we'll have the opportunity a year from now to see how well that's worked. We can revisit it if we need to. But if it's going well and we're able to open up some more, and then we can start to look at some other areas and some other employees and begin to provide first-class service to all of our employees. And so I'm for this. I'm for my children being able to get on a bus and with someone who takes pride in what they do, and it's their equipment, and they care about what they're doing, and typically most of the time live in the community where they work. So,
any other comments? Good. So, need to call for the vote then.
Mr. Galloway?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mrs. Lennon?
No.
Mrs. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Testerman?
Yes.
Mrs. Thurman?
Yes.
Mr. Wingate?
Yes.
Chairman Highlander?
Yes. Thank you. Events and announcements. We have several here. Do any of you have any events or announcements that you'd like to make? Mr. Wingate, did you have some?
Oh, sorry. Okay. I'd just like,
Mr. Testerman,
clarify when we will meet again.
I have asked Dr. Johnson to meet with his administrative staff and make plans, and then as needed, we will contact. Is that correct, Dr. Johnson? We will look at revisiting the partnership zone after he and his staff and his team have had a chance to put some plans together. August 20th, is that correct?
I think so.
Ms. Ford?
Yes. August 17th.
Okay, well, I'm incorrect then.
August 17th.
So our next regular meeting will be the 17th.
Right.
But we may perhaps reserve the right to have a work session before then if Dr. Johnson believes it's necessary.
Don't forget to be here early for that meeting. I will.
Ms. Robinson, do you have an announcement?
I just wanted to, many of you may have been aware or been involved, but Orchardon Middle School last week had, gosh, probably 50 different community groups come out that adopted every single portion of their school. We had a sidewalk, concrete laid by a concrete vendor. We had every classroom repainted. I mean, the hallways decorated. The gym is getting completely repainted this week. And so I just wanted to tell the community thank you for your support at Orchardon Middle School and just for giving your love and labor to that school. I mean, it looks phenomenal, and I'm just so impressed with the leadership team there and how they've been able to pull in the community to really engage that school. So just wanted to make a public thank you.
And again, we welcome Dr. Johnson for his first meeting as our superintendent.
Also in Sail Creek, we should be having the grand opening for the new addition to Sail Creek. I'm not sure that date yet, but we will be having that, and I'm just super excited about that.
Thank you.
Dr. Highlander,
yes,
just
sir.
Real quick, just to let you know, Sail Creek addition is finished. Wolf Tiber is on track to be finished within the next 2 weeks. Visited there a couple of weeks ago. It's looking phenomenal. It's going to be a large school, but looks great. Encourage you to go out and visit Wolf Tiber and Sail Creek's additions.
Thank you, Dr. McDade and Mr. Witt, for your services in those two. Okay. We're adjourned. Thank you.